You're listening to Sci-Fi For Me Radio.
After this, there are only three more episodes of Sleepy Hollow left in the season. But if you think this is the end, Sci-Fi For Chicks is here to tell you that this episode is where it all begins.
200 years in purgatory have dearly sapped my skills, but I'm gradually growing stronger. And now, as we enter a time of clarity and tide, my powers are peaking.
That's handy.
Magic is an innate talent, but it must be honed through practice.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping that we can count on that talent to help us now.
The Grand Grimoire. This is a powerful and dangerous spellbook.
It was stolen from a local auction house last night.
Here, after all this time. Someone must have drawn it to this place. Perhaps through a summoning spell.
A magical summoner.
Or another tormented soul released from purgatory after Moloch's death.
The consequences of Moloch's evil may never cease.
I know you still mourn our son.
I just hope his actions have brought him some peace.
Hello and welcome back to Sci-Fi for Chicks. Now, you hopefully are hearing from us much earlier than you thought you were going to be hearing from us, because we had been saying in our marathon podcasting that I wasn't going to be able to record until the end of the week, so it was going to be a long time before you heard us. Thank you, Fox, for helping us out here a little and letting us have this episode early, because, oh my god, this was such a good episode. And it is so good that I haven't even said, hi, my name is Heather, and I am joined, as always, by Alex, who is also very happy that Fox let us watch this episode early.
Oh my god.
Spoiler alert.
There is a chance we are excited about this episode. I don't know if you got that little hint here and there, but yes, we are.
Or if you saw our tweet that we did, where I'm like, hey, Alex, let's get through this Gotham podcast so we can get to Sleepy Hollow.
Oh my god.
Now, I do have to say, we also, of course, you know, we podcast Gotham, and it was a good episode. If we hadn't had this episode of Sleepy, we would have been very excited about podcasting about that last episode.
Yeah,
whatever. We wanted
Sleepy
to
Hollow now. Let's talk.
So we are doing another marathon. We're adding, this is part four of our marathon podcast to catch up for 2015, and you've already seen the episode by the time you listen to this podcast. You are with us, I'm sure, in oh my god, it's so exciting. I do want to say something I really like in this is that Sleepy Hollow has always been really good about having their A story and their B story and doing things really well. This was and something that we always tell Gotham writers, look at how they're doing this so much better, where we're interested in the A and it feels like an A, and we're interested in the B and it feels like a B. This story is one where I really liked the A story. And then it got about halfway, two thirds of the way through the story, and I went, wait a second, I don't think the A story is what I thought the A story was, but I still love it. It started out as a typical episode, and mm-hmm. It turned into so not a typical episode.
It was amazing, like,
just
so good.
Something else that the Gotham writers need to really look at is how Sleepy Hollow deals with characters that aren't there and keeping them relevant. Now, we have had a few issues in the past, but they've dealt with it, I think, really well. I liked this one little throwaway line about Jenny and why she's not there. How later in the episode, when we have Abby and Crane calling on Irving to help, which we're going to talk about later. That's much later. But how they dealt with it is like, yeah, she's off chasing the orb of mystical awesomeness. Just this little throwaway line goes, okay, this is why Jenny's not here. It's not, you know, we're just forgetting about her. We wanted to go with Irving instead of Jenny. So we'll just forget about Jenny for this episode. Yeah. She's off dealing with something. I don't know if that means that she is off chasing Hottie, if she's with Hottie, if what? Because we know Hottie has already made his exit as well. But it's a nice little throwaway to let me know you still care about this character. She just didn't fit into this episode, and we're going to deal with that.
Yeah. I really liked it. Sure, I would love Jenny as much on the screen as possible, because I adore her. But I like how the writers don't forget about her. Mm-hmm. Even if she's not in the episode, there's still something connecting her to the story. Like, you know, the mystical orb of awesomeness, which is possibly the best artifact name ever. It's deliciously descriptive and on point, and it made me go, huh, yeah. Like, Jenny needs anything to make her more awesome.
Yeah. Well, and I like the fact that it kind of gave Abby, too, that whole little mystical orb of awesomeness, you know, that sisterly kind of thing. Yeah, she's off chasing that, you know, whatever. Yeah, she's being that humor, but also that sisterly kind of thing. So it was a fun little sister moment, I think. And yes, it is a great name. I'm gonna use that one. I think definitely. Just so you know, teaser, not really a spoiler, but we do see Jenny next week, according to the next synopsis. So she is back. This is just a short little chase for that orb of mystical awesomeness. She'll be back next week, and it sounds good. I'm not saying anything more because Alex told me not to say more about what's happening next week.
No, because we do not spoil the fun for people. So shush. And let's move on.
Okay. Well, if I'm not going to spoil the fun for everybody, I'm going to do my little technical rant. Alex has her rants. I have my technical rants. And I want to get these out of the way because I love this episode, but there are two humongous technical things that bothered the crap out of me.
Okay.
And I'm going to start first with, we talked in a previous episode, the Benedict Arnold episode, where you were saying, yeah, that doesn't matter to us over here. That's something so American. Very Benedict Arnold, that whole thing.
Whatever.
Do you guys know much about the Salem Witch Trials? Do you realize how big this was for us? Or is it just, yeah, Salem Witch Trials?
The Salem Witch Trials is basically what we learn from pop culture. Because, seriously, nobody cares.
Okay. Well, actually, yes, a lot of people do care because this is all about intolerance. And what Abby said in the episode is 100% right. If you're in America, you read The Crucible, you get to know what this whole thing is because it's something that's this ongoing, continuing issue that happens. It's happening again in politics right now. Yeah. I'm sure it's happening in politics over there with you. Definitely happening over here. The Crucible came out when we had the whole Red Scare thing here in America, HUAC, House Un-American Activities Committee, and Joseph McCarthy. But it really did reference back to this first Salem Witch Trials, which is very well documented, incredibly well documented. This is, I mean, you can go, if you can just look at Wiki, it is just what would be page after page after page. There are books on this. There's all this documentation. And what they do in this episode is, other than the idea of the witch trials, is nothing like the witch trials. How it happened, what was going on, who the people were, who the first people were. I mean, they have the documented of who were the first ones that were quote unquote afflicted and then accused, and the names of all the accused and what happened to them. This is a very well documented thing. And Sleepy has been pretty good about keeping the actual history and tweaking it to suit it. This is complete and utter departure from what the actual history was. And that really annoyed me because it wasn't just a little thing. This is a big thing. They were basically totally rewriting the Salem Witch Trials. So that was a huge historical note. And like I said, they've been so good at taking actual history and tweaking it. Here's this battle and this little thing here. We're just going to tweak it a little bit and put this little spin on it. Totally rewritten, and it bothers me a lot.
So it's okay as long as they write in the margins, but the moment they throw the book out of the window, it's bad.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Salem Witch Trials, we had Puritans that were, you know, going all frenzy about this and just throwing people under the bus and killing them. That's basically what they think the Salem Witch Trials were, and it's not. You know, we didn't even have the whole thing with the accusers other than Solomon Kent being the accuser. So, yeah, that was a huge writing error, as far as I'm concerned, on the writers of this show, that they just decided to throw it so totally out the window. Because it is just so well documented. I will say that some of the first accusers, a few of the women that were the first among the accused were named Sarah. So maybe that's what they did. That, you know, they're at least close there, that the Sarah that Solomon was in love with, there were Sarahs that were originally accused. But to be so completely off of what the Salem witch trials were is just... Now, if they'd said this happened in another enclave, because it didn't just happen in Salem, it happened in a lot of neighboring townships and such. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like this big area. If they had said that it was another little enclave that maybe they didn't document it as well, or mm-hmm. everybody knows about this, but they didn't realize in this town it was also happening, mm-hmm. I would have been more okay with it. But, yeah. Okay. That's enough on that rant. So, whew, God, that was so technical, right? But just, it bothered
Take
me.
Take a deep breath. Take a deep breath.
Okay, now we're going to go more. Remember last week? Wait, no. Yesterday. I don't remember how many episodes ago it was, because it was yesterday for us. Remember how in date night we said if they had just flipped the curator and mm-hmm. and Ichabod's friend, this small little change would have made a huge difference? Mm-hmm. There is a small little change, one word that they could have made that would have remedied this whole technical error. Well, not completely, because there's a part. And that was, Katrina is talking about her grandmother, was Helena Van Tassel. Okay, actually, there's two errors that I have on that, so I have two rants on this. It's like the Spanish Inquisition, you know, but Monty Python joke there. If they just added the word great to grandmother, it would have made sense, because they're saying, she said her grandmother, and that her mother was there, and that little girl, somewhere between 4 and 8. I guessed more 6, but I'll give the plus or minus 2. The Salem witch trial started in 1692, which would mean that girl was born at the latest 1688. So 1684, 1688. So if she was already born then, and if we give Katrina, if we make Katrina as old as the actress, Katia Winter, that plays her, and she's 31, so that's gorgeous, that would mean that Katrina would have been born somewhere around 1750. That means her mother gave birth to her sometime around her 64th, 68th year. Yeah. That doesn't jive. So if it had been her great grandmother.
I'm not very good with math, but that does sound like a problem.
It's a bit of a problem, especially in that day and age. You know, it's, so just if they'd said great grandmother, my great grandmother, I'd be much more okay with it. The other problem that I have with that is also, it's the same thing I had with Charmed.
Mm-hmm.
It's Katrina Van Tassel. That was Helena Van Tassel. The names back then traveled along the male line, not line, the female line. So, it wouldn't have been her mother would have been Van Tassel. When she got married, she wouldn't have been a Van Tassel.
That was the one thing that I actually noticed, and I went like, wait a minute. Are you trying to tell me that Katrina's mother did not marry? Because if she married anyone, she wouldn't be a Van Tassel. And therefore, if Katrina was Van Tassel, that means that her mother married a Van Tassel.
Yeah. Yeah, which is kind of creepy.
It is, and if especially. She didn't,
and if she didn't marry, if Katrina was born out of wedlock, she would not have been as accepted into society as Katrina was.
Yeah.
So, writers, you're getting a little fast and loose. You've been watching too much Charmed with the Halliwell line that's lasted for hundreds and hundreds of years, with all the Halliwell women all having the name Halliwell. Love Charmed. Little minor thing that, is a little stumbling block. So, those are my major technical rants. You can go ahead and say I'm crazy, but sorry. They just really bothered me. Now let's get to the good stuff. I got that out of my system. Now I can talk about how much I love this episode. That's amazing.
We got through all the stuff that is wrong with it. Well, not all, because there are still some other stuff. But yeah, how do you feel about it? Isn't it cathartic?
That was almost 10 minutes of ranting. Oof. I am so sorry, listeners. It's cathartic, right? It was very cathartic, and I'm glad that you stuck with it, and I know you guys have stuck with it because you want to hear about what we're going to say about the end.
Breathe.
Oh, That was a pitch that only a dog could hear. Let's get to our original A story, which is Solomon Kent.
And everything that's wrong with the Salem witch trials.
Well, no, I've already dealt with that. Yeah. So we're going to deal with what it is in the story. I've already vented about how wrong it is, but let's go in with this character. I mean, first it was played by Jonathan, sorry, I could never pronounce his last name, who I always think of from That Thing You Do, when he's like, I quit. I love That Thing You Do. It's a great movie. But, and at first I was like, huh, who's, I know him. Ooh, look at him with the shirt off. And I was like, oh, you're that guy. Cause with the hair and the Puritan stuff. Yeah, it looks a little different. When he first showed up, I thought he might be John Dee. And I love that they brought in John Dee and that we're going Elizabethan and all this cause mm-hmm. John Dee has such a great historical context, but he also has that mythical context as well. If anybody's ever read The Secrets of the Immortal Nicholas Flamel, he's the antagonist in that. And
but
it
more
was really
importantly,
cool. I'd like to bring that in.
It would be a character not directly connected to the Cranes.
Yes.
So that would be fun and new.
Yes. Well, you know, maybe if the book appears again, if we don't know, maybe it will, maybe it won't. Maybe we will get something there. But Solomon Kent, who, when Katrina hears this name, he is this most feared warlock. So we have some bad witchiness going on. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about Solomon and also his motivation for good or bad with mm-hmm. Sarah kind of spurning him.
Well, okay. Here's my rant that isn't really a rant. But the reason he is a warlock isn't only because he does bad things, but also because he practices blood magic,
mm-hmm.
which has this, you know, stereotype of being this evil, dark magic and everything. And I'm kind of done with everybody, you know, if we have an evil warlock, he has to practice blood magic or necromancy. It's always one mm-hmm. of the two. Because clearly, this, see how evil he is? He practices those dark arts and all, everything. And every time this happens, I have this need to draw a gun analogy. And say that, well, magic doesn't kill people. Spellcasters do. So, it's because there are things that we as people, as society, judge as evil because of some, you know, historical evidence. And I keep waiting for somebody to practice necromancy and to practice blood magic and not be an evil warlock. Like, hey, let's do something original. But no.
The views expressed by the podcasters on this podcast are not necessarily representative of the other podcasters or scififorme.com.
Hey, I'm looking for something original. Sleepy Hollow is awesome, and they do original very well. So when there are things that I've seen, I read urban fantasy. I write urban fantasy. I've seen it done millions of times. So while it might not be something you're tired of, it is something I'm tired of, basically, as an urban fantasy fan. So yeah, he practiced blood magic. But going back to him being spurned by Sarah, I liked the way the story developed, because it started as one thing, and I thought I knew where this was going, mm-hmm. but then it turned out it wasn't going the way I thought. And not only in the story where we thought from the beginning that he would be raising Sarah from the dead, and that was... Mm-hmm. an incredible plot twist.
Like, especially after last week, or the last episode, was it the last episode when Jenny was pulling the bullets out of the
yes,
zombie monster
yes,
guy?
Yes.
I was thinking, oh, are we going to have a Walking Dead in Sleepy Hollow? That's what I was thinking.
Exactly. And it was like when it stopped being raising people from the dead and started being a time travel episode, I was like, yes, yes,
yes.
Thank you.
It went from Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows to Doctor Who.
Yeah, basically. But it was such a nice twist, and it wasn't, a twist in a way that we came to think about plot twists. Like, shocker. It was like, you thought you knew where this was going. You were wrong.
It was delicious. You thought we were going to be raining hell on earth with all the undead rising and all this kind of stuff. And it's like,
no, we're talking time paradox.
We're talking about City on the Edge of Forever. We're going to go back and change this one teeny thing that could have changed everything. So, yeah, that was, yeah. I went from Walking Dead to Star Trek on that. I'm like, oh, we're doing totally different on that. I think he made a good baddie. I mean, he had the right amount of
seeding
and ominousness and when he did, you notice when he would cut his wrist to the blood magic. First off, yes, he was doing the I mean it cut. You don't go across. You go lengthwise. I'm sorry, I'm not trying to like tell you guys how to commit suicide or anything. But I mean, you go lengthwise, that opens up the vein even more, so that amount of blood that was pouring out of him was real. That was very, and it, I mean, okay, first off, the blood boiling part, that was evil. You think about what that is. Like, what did these people do to you? They're not going to be able to do anything. They just take the book and leave. You don't have to boil their blood inside them. And then the next time when he raises those demons, which I'm like, well, so are you just trying out all the different kinds of blood magic that you can do? Why wouldn't you do the blood boil with them? Or I don't know. Okay, a little sloppy on that one. But he was just, so when he did you notice like his head would go down, so it would, the brim would come down and the eyes would do that white thing, and he just looked so menacing and scary. And I can see why Katrina was scared of him. I really could.
Yeah, plus he really believed what he was saying when he was talking to Katrina. And
that was
so intense. And he got through to her.
Mm-hmm.
And that's even more delicious.
Oh, like, my gosh.
All
yes.
The implication of that. I have to agree. He was one of the best baddies Sleepy Hollow had so far. Because there were so many sides to him. He was so complex. His motivations, his actions weren't so clean cut. Like,
exactly.
Oh my goodness. And he probably believed that he deserved to get his happy ending. In his mind, he probably believed he was the hero of the story.
Because it was all an accident. It was all an accident. He didn't mean to kill Sarah in the beginning. So, and he didn't.
Oh my God. While I don't want them to bring him back, I want more villains like him. Even if they are here for one episode only, now I know that Sleepy Hollow writers are capable of making such complex characters and showing off all the complexity in one episode. Honey, if you can do it now, you can continue doing that. I want more of that.
And what they did was, just like, you know, we've had more on Hottie now. We've seen more. We have a little bit more investment other than he's hot.
Yeah.
And he's got the smirk and the swagger and the, you know, the quippy lines, you know, his a cross between Indiana Jones and Sawyer from Lost. Oh, I got lost in again.
You're adorable.
I like that this, and in conjunction with Date Night, where we had, I don't even remember because it was that Petura Infamante thing. And in addition to Date Night, where we've learned more about Katrina's background, this isn't her background so much as her family's background, but it gets more into her witchiness and what that is. Now, you know, that whole scene in the beginning when she's raising the flower and she turns it into this pretty red daisy, and it's like, oh, isn't that sweet? And real quick side note, finally the girl is out of a corset. She's in something that looks comfortable and modern, and she fits in.
Yes.
Yay! I bet she's happy.
We approve.
She can, like, I can have regular undergarments. You men don't understand how important that is, to have just regular, comfy undergarments, as opposed to a corset. They have, with Solomon Kent, have really brought out this other side of her, and I think have really shown us where Katrina's potentially can go, and why she is relevant. She is not just part of the Scooby Gang. Matter of fact, I don't think she's going to be in the Scooby gang. That whole thing where Solomon's saying that he can see the seeds of darkness within her. And do you ever think about why your powers fail you at the times you most need them? You know, that she's not following her correct path, and her questioning things like, my powers do fail me when I need them most. I mean, remember how in the painting, when she was trying to get them out, how many times she had to say that spell over and over and over again, mm-hmm. to get her and Crane and the curator out of the painting.
Yeah.
Things are failing her at times that she doesn't need. And there are those seeds probably, I don't know. I think it's going to bring out this really great side to Katrina's character. And I think it's going to put her in the camp with Headless and with other people that we will talk about later. I don't want to get there yet. I don't even want to say the names yet because I want to talk about that later. I think we're moving her out of the Scooby gang, but the Scooby gang isn't going to know that she's
no longer there.
Out. Yeah, because it's going to be a slow one. It's not going to be an instant turn.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be like how Henry was at the end of last season, where we think he's our friend and he's a sin eater, and suddenly, guess what? I'm not. Ha ha. Nah, 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 nah. It's going to be this slow burn where that seed of darkness is going to just slowly grow. And I think it's going to bring such a great side to Katrina.
Yeah. And actually, of all the writers and all the shows that I'm currently watching, which is a lot, mm-hmm. I think that Sleepy Hollow writers can actually pull it off. Mm-hmm. Because not every writing staff can execute this slow descent into darkness.
Mm-hmm.
And not every actor or every actress can pull it off. But Katia Winters, Katrina, and with those writers, I'm actually super excited. Because I know what they can do. I've seen what they can do in this episode, mm-hmm. even. So to have this idea that this might not only be a season 2 story arc for Katrina, mm-hmm. but it might go beyond season 2 and well into season 3. So it would actually be this drawn out thing that might not even end with her on the darker side, so to speak, by the end of season 2.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me so excited. I mean, I cannot even put my excitement into words. This is how excited I am. Of all the possibilities that suddenly this episode gave me with Katrina, we keep complimenting writers on how Katrina is getting her own agenda, is being her own person, is developing outside of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like we're about to get our Christmas presents and birthday presents and
February 23rd. Christmas,
yeah, more Christmas presents. It's coming, Heather, and we're going to be so happy.
And we've talked about how in the first season, Katrina really had to be very two-dimensional because she was just in that two-dimensional world. She was in purgatory. We could only get to her through the mirror. Mm-hmm. And then she's out of purgatory at the very end. And so now she's a three-dimensional being in the story. But wait, we're not ready for her yet. So, you know, there was all those conflicts about what she was doing. It helps bring, I think, her in the beginning of this season a little bit more into light with her being stuck with Henry and Abraham and the necklace and seeing this. I mean, she still has this necklace, around her neck to see really the dark side. I mean, if you think about it, seeing Abraham not as this evil monster or headless horseman, but seeing him as Abraham, that he's been getting into her soul as well. I mean, he's part of that seed of darkness that has been planted. And I didn't really think of it as he was affecting her as much as her trying to affect him. While she's been trying to go, I want to bring the good back out in you, he's been going into her as well, into her soul, and helping plant that seed of darkness and realizing why this happened and to him and why it's happening to her and why, you know, he's been part of that as well. Plus the fact that her son was so evil and was doing all of this. And she's been in the heart of evil. Whereas Crane and Abby have been battling it, she's been living it. And then we got a little bit of Stockholm Syndrome going on here, where she's going to not see the danger of the path she's on until it's too late. And I think it's, I'm now seeing everything in the beginning of the season that we were complaining about with her really be very important with where she is and where she's going.
Yeah. That is how you do character development.
Yeah, it sneaks up on you, which is, that's what this episode did. It had so many things that snuck up on you. Like we were saying, what we think is the A storyline with Solomon Kent and the Salem witch trials and everything turning out not really to be our payoff.
Yeah.
Again, we'll get to that in a minute. That's just sneaky. It's those seeds of that story that have been planted in us now, too. Mm. Oh, it's so exciting. I'm excited about Katrina. I'm excited about, and we liked Katrina. I'm excited about Katrina. I'm interested to hear what some of the other viewers think about Katrina in this change. So let us know. I'm gonna go ahead and plug us right now and get it out of the way. Sci-fi for chicks at sci-fi4me.com for email and at sci-fi for chicks on Twitter and 573-427-2434. That's 573-42-SCI-FI. Let us know. I mean, is this helping you see Katrina in a different light or not?
Is that a question to me or to the listeners?
Both.
Well, I don't see Katrina.
They're not going to answer me as quickly, so. Yeah.
Well, I don't see Katrina in a different light because I loved her since she came back from Purgatory. I did not care for her in season one because in season one she was a plot device more often than not. But ever since she joined the living, so to speak, she was a character I was rooting for. And I was hoping that the writers would like Katrina as much as I like her. I like her because if the writers like you, you get good storylines.
That's true.
And apparently writers love Katrina. Mm-hmm. And I love the writers.
Something I think is kind of interesting, even going to her costuming with the fact that she's wearing something that looks, it still fits her because she's got the long flowing sweater cardigan thing. So she still has that flowing to her, but you know, she's got the pants and the top and all that. So she looks very modern, but she still has that element of the past. She is still really straddling those two sides so much more than Crane is, than Ichabod is.
Yeah.
Ichabod is still very much that 18th century man in modern day world. And he is staying true to himself. He's clothing. He's still dressing like he was back then. It might be new clothes, but it's still consistent with his previous life. Katrina is, her lines are very blurred. She's in both worlds.
I think in a way her wardrobe is showing her struggle with herself. Like Solomon said, she is in conflict with herself. And I think her attempts at finding her place in this new contemporary world are a part of her trying to find a place for herself in the team witness, in the fight that they had, in the world of magic that she is now a soul presence. Because she's the only witch she knows. Mm-hmm. Like, there is no coven in Sleepy Hollow anymore that she knows.
That she's connected to.
Yeah, that she's connected to. So she's trying to find her place on so many different levels that I think it shows in the way she dresses. Because in the previous episode, when she was doing the ritual for Frank, she was wearing her corset, the green corset, and suddenly she's not anymore. So she is...
She went shopping.
Yeah, she went shopping. But on a deeper level, it's her way of, you know, trying, maybe this works for me. Maybe this is where I can belong to. So seeing her by the end of the episode, trying the darker magic with the eyes and everything, it's her trying to see if Solomon Kent was right.
Yeah.
And that look on her face when she realized that he might be right. It was the best. I loved it.
You know, something
her.
I think that you kind of brought up, and I'm going to expand on a little bit more, the difference in, you know, Crane and Ichabod and Katrina, they're married. So of course we know each other. And even though they realize that they've had differences and they have to start again, I think they both still feel that they know each other, but aren't realizing how different they were even back then.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at Katrina, I mean, Crane has really been used to flitting between different things, whether he's with George Washington here, Ben Franklin here. I'm flitting, you know, I have, not that his allegiances waver, because they don't. Mm-hmm. He's very steadfast, but he compartmentalizes these things better. He's better to go from situation to situation on his own, or have that one steadfast companion, or this little group, like with Abby. Katrina is from a coven, like you were saying, and she was used to having that coven, that support group, that family with her.
Mm-hmm.
She's been very family oriented, and she's going, you know, that's her connection with Jeremy, and she tried to save Jeremy with her coven. And when we saw her lamenting about her friend Abigail Adams, you know, how that loss of her friends from back then, it seemed to affect her differently than it does Ichabod. His friends back then, I mean, he still calls on them for that knowledge that he knows to propel him and his story and his interactions forward. But Katrina, she was like looking at the desk and touching things, wanting to be back with her friends then, Abigail Adams. She wants to be in a coven. She's supposed to be a part of something. And like you said, she doesn't have a coven here.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't have that support system here of the type of people that she's used to. She has Ichabod, but Ichabod's not totally understanding her. She has Abby and Jenny and Hottie, but you know, those are all Ichabod's friends.
Mm-hmm.
Those aren't her friends. Those are, she knows them through Ichabod. And we've had that tension between Katrina and Abby that's been there.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that Katrina feels totally welcome. The place that she's actually been most suited to, ironically, was with Abraham and was with Henry.
Yeah.
And her first magical, you know, witchy type presence is Solomon Kent. And she doesn't, I think she's going to be more easily seduced, not out of fault, but because these are, it's kind of like, those are her people and those are your people, Ichabod. And yeah, she doesn't have any magical presence. If we don't get a coven for her of good witches, I see her easily going to that because that's all she knows.
Mm. And it's, well, frankly, I'm hoping she won't get a coven of good witches to be around.
Not till the end. End of the series.
Yeah, that potential.
Not the season, the series.
She might try creating a coven of her own if, mm-hmm. for example, they come across people with magic potential that isn't realized. Mm-hmm. That would be a nice turn of events.
Yeah, but where she's at right now, that could be a...
But I like it. I like it as a way... We are now witnessing her descent into mm-hmm. the darker parts of magic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she mm-hmm. might try starting a coven as a way of recovery. To create... Because if you don't have a support system that
which she
you
doesn't
can
really right now.
Handle, you can, you know, relate to, which she doesn't right now. Sure, Ichabod would support her, but not really, because magic and the history of her betraying him, la 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 la, and all that. But I think as a way of recovery from the darkness, she could try and create a support system for herself. Mm-hmm. And it will be yet another step towards showing how strong she is, because I truly believe that she can recover from the darkness that the writers have in store for her on her own.
But not for a while.
I don't want her to recover for a while, because I want to see the darker side so much. But at some point in season 3, at the end, season 4 or something, I want her to recover on her own, and I believe she can do it.
I'd like to actually see her have some kind of connection outside of Ichabod with Abby, because we did have that little, again, a nice little reference to Grace's diary, mm-hmm. Abby's ancestor, when we hear Kent say something about, you know, the traveler thing, and that's how they find out about the traveler spell and figure out we're not trying to raise the dead, we're trying to go back. And we do know that Grace has that connection back mm-hmm. to that time and back to those people and back to Katrina and such. So I'm hoping that in the future, not anytime soon, I want to keep going down this path, and I want to let Katrina get this complexity, because I think she needs to fall in order to rise again.
Oh yeah.
You know, it she needs to like do this grand fall.
It's going to be glorious.
Especially because how idolized she was by Ichabod in season one.
Yeah.
Katrina can do no wrong. Katrina. And how disappointed he was with her and where their relationship had gotten at, you know, by the mid-season finale this season. I want to see her really fall and really fight back to come back, to really make that choice. Am I going to be, you know, just kind of like headless right now has that choice.
Yeah.
Do I stay, you know, the horseman of death, or do I find a way to separate from that and become Abraham again? I think Katrina has a very similar path that she's going to have to go on. And it's going to be interesting because it's similar to Abraham's, but Crane and Abby are not going to see it. I think that opens up the door for Jenny and Hottie to see it.
Oh, yeah.
Abby is, I think, more is like, I need to trust, you know, Crane and I have to be on the same page. And I've already been against Katrina, so I think she might try and support him more on that. I think Jenny and Hottie might see that a bit more.
Yeah, because they don't have the emotional connection. Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely.
So, yay! Katrina's getting a good story.
We are excited.
Let's move to our two heroes, Abby and Crane. Again, which we didn't start the podcast here, but we start with this really great moment of Abby has been summoned by a page, an urgent page, and it's because we're looking at a 3-bedroom, 2-bath craftsman. I love this moment. I'm really glad that they keep these in there, these little bits of humor, and that they started off, because it makes it Sleepy Hollow for me. It's like we have the technical problems, knock on wood, that are our stamp of authenticity. This is what makes it a Sleepy Hollow to me.
Oh yeah.
And I love that, like him with the squeaky banana, and the mini muffins he took. 2 and then a 3rd mini muffin, and you know, he really does want this, preferably with granite countertops. I'm like, oh, I love you.
No, this was hilarious, and it showed that after previous episodes and those little snags and tiny little problems and conflicts, they still have this dynamic, this seamless, effortless way of being together, and you know, interacting is just priceless. And those are the little tiny moments that kept me watching Sleepy Hollow when I was thinking, yeah, I have to cut back on TV shows. So yeah.
But
Sleepy Hollow and those little moments, like house hunting with Ichabod Crane.
That's I could cute watch house.
An entire show of Ichabod Crane hunting.
I love watching, can I tell you, I love watching the House Hunter shows and things like that. I would love to see Ichabod go on like House Hunters and be looking for a house and have to choose between the three. That would be hilarious. We need to make a mashup, you know, like a video like that. That would be
This is a
hilarious.
Spin-off show that they could release on the internet as a special featurette on the site or something. It would be priceless. Awesome.
Well, because in addition to giving us that bit of humor and that connection with them, did you notice it was a way that we are moving the story forward? He's talked about the fact that he can't just live in the archives.
Yeah.
And so he's at the cabin, you know, now him and Katrina doing the cabin, but they can't live at Corbin's cabin forever. They have to, you know, like they're even talking about in that first episode when he was like, you know, got to get a job and got to get this and, the, you know, all the things that you have to do in normal life. They are dealing with the fact that I mean, it would be unbelievable for him to just constantly be this demon chaser.
Yeah.
And not have to worry about where do you sleep, where do you bathe, where do you eat? How do you get the money to pay for where you sleep and you bathe and you eat? And I
right
like
now,
that,
I'm assuming that Abby and Jenny are basically paying for the food that Ichabod and Katrina eat.
Right.
Because, yeah.
And there's only so far that, you know, a witness wants to represent for that. You know, it's like, okay, yeah. I'm tired of paying for you. Make your own way. I know you killed a few demons, but how are you getting putting food on the table?
I like it's, that so touch of realism.
Nice yeah.
Because
and
the more realistic we get, the setup is, the easier it is for us to suspend our belief to add mm-hmm. the magic stuff in. So yeah. I love those yep. tiny little moments that are so real and down to earth that, I hope they never give it up and keep those in every single episode that they can.
And the fact that, you know, he's been seduced enough by our modern sensibilities that he really wants the granite countertops.
And he needs a garage where he can put the shiny car and the motorcycle. Oh, yeah. Don't forget he wants a motorcycle.
Can you see him out like on his back patio, like grilling up some brats and burgers?
In skinny jeans.
Back your Oh my God. Tom Meissen, we have all sorts of things for you to do for like little webisode things. That would be hilarious. They would just be wonderful. But we do have them actually trying to help fight Simon Kent and dealing with Katrina and all this. I like the fact that he quoted Edward R. Murrow. It's like, ooh, moving up here, you know, into this
reading
is,
up and
this
stuff.
Is somebody with, yeah, exactly. And him saying that he would have made the founding fathers proud because that was a nice thing. So he's not just staying stuck in his past. He is really studying our history as well.
But this is what happens when you're comfortable with yourself and with your place in the world. He might mm-hmm. be out of time, but he's Ichabod Crane. He is comfortable and confident in the person that he is. He embraced his role as a witness. He embraced his destiny, so to speak. And now he is catching up with the events that the world faced when he was sleeping,
mm-hmm.
but he doesn't do it to fit in. He does it because he's Ichabod Crane, and if he doesn't know something, it will kill him.
Yeah, if he did it just to fit in, he'd be okay with the squeaky bananas.
Yeah.
He's not okay with the squeaky bananas. So they go to battle Solomon Kent.
Okay.
Little unbelievable thing. They've got to fight him with the elements. How quickly did they set up the wind machine and the electricity and the puddle of water? I'm suspending my disbelief because I love the whole house hunting so much. So we'll just forget
how they were able to do that. Simply.
Yeah, they just did that. We're not going to worry about it. Katrina is out of the picture right now because she was so shaken. They don't really understand why she was so shaken. Really? They think it's just because she used so much magic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not so much, guys. You might want to go check on her and check the eyes a little bit. So they battle in the forest with the elements, and they need some help. And Jenny is, of course, looking for that orb of mystical awesomeness.
Yeah.
So they call on Irving, who has now proven himself. He was following Abby.
Quote, unquote, he was following him.
Yeah, they were, you know, stalking. They have their little moment, and they're moving on. So everything's good. He's good. He's back in the Scooby Gang. We're excited to have you. I can't get Jenny. I can't get Hottie. So we're calling on Irving. We have this battle with Solomon Kent. This big baddie is taken care of actually pretty easily.
Mm.
Don't you think?
Yeah, but I liked the idea of creating your own magic.
Yeah.
That premise sold me on everything. Which is why I completely ignored how fast they set it all up.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah, because she even said, we got to get a wind machine. We got to get all this stuff. In the next scene, they have all this stuff. I thought it was great. Yeah, it was a great way to battle with science and technology and like you said, creating your own magic.
I liked how it didn't, how it stopped Solomonkin, but it didn't kill him.
Yeah.
So that Irving could...
I wanted to know why, after Abby and Crane basically took him down, why they're out suddenly running, Irving, Irving! I mean, I know why. Because we have to get Irving to the body. Our good guy, I'm using air quotes that you can't see, has to get to the body. But Abby and Crane conveniently leave.
No, and Irving comes, it made up on sense. Him. Come on. It made sense. Because when Salomon Kent was fighting them, he threw this energy blast at Ichabod. Okay. And then he turned around and threw the energy blast at Irving. And when they called after him and he didn't respond... Come on.
Oh, so you're saying, only, so this is, you're saying this is a you didn't answer your phone moment.
Yeah. Only, come on. Okay. Put yourself in their shoes. Only a couple days ago, Irving wasn't alive for them, as far as they were concerned. Uh-huh. And you tell me that they didn't freak out that this was another battle that they brought Irving in and he didn't survive?
I don't know, because she did make the comment. Now, I will say, okay, real quick, I want to go back to a comment that I love that he said, that he was catching up on things and saw all the naked reality TV shows and maybe he should have stayed dead. Abby does make the comment that the afterlife suits him. So I think she still thinks that there's something there.
Mm.
But okay, I'll give with you that that's why they left. So we have good guy Crane. We have good gal, Abby, going off looking for their reclaimed friend, Irving, yeah. Who you love. You have loved from the beginning. You
yes,
have just
yes,
loved,
my precious
loved,
baby.
Loved, loved, loved. And he walks up on Solomon, and he takes the grand
book,
grimoire.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm good with that. He's going to take that off them.
And then he breaks his neck.
He steps and breaks his neck. And poof! Solomon Kent, our A story, has disappeared literally in a puff of dust.
And my
and
heart
we,
stopped.
And that one moment, we have this whole turn in what we thought Irving was. Oh my God!
And my heart stopped because this was everything I wanted and everything I didn't want. Because why should it be so simple for poor little me? I love Irving, and everybody who listens to this podcast, no, I love Irving. Irving is my precious baby, and I want everything that's good for him. I want him happy, I want him safe, I want him relatively undamaged. But at the same time...
He looks good. He looks good, healthy.
He is relatively undamaged, yeah.
He's clean, the cut, everything color back in his skin, you know, the eyes are bright and shiny. He looks good.
But at the same time... So I don't want him to be evil in any way, because I want him happy and safe, and I want to hug him, for God's sake. Me and my black, black heart. But at the same time, this is such a delicious, juicy storyline that it's everything I wanted for Orlando Jones. He's going to sink his teeth into this, and he's not going to let go until we are left breathless and shaking at the edges of our seats because this is going to be awesome.
I got to tell you, the minute that he signed that contract back with Henry, early in the season, I'm like, okay, well, we had good Irving who was alive. From here on out, it's one or the other. You can't have both. So when he was killed, and you were so lamenting, I'm like, well, he's going to be back. The whole time I'm thinking, I don't want to tell Alex, it's not going to be good. He can either die a hero or he can come back, not so much.
But see, here's the thing. After he signed the contract, everything they wanted to play out could have played out with him as a victim, as an unwilling accomplice. You know, under duress and everything. But right now, after this one scene, there is nothing indicating that he's not a willing participant.
Oh, he hid that grimoire nicely. He lied to Abby and Ichabod's face. No problem, not a sweat, not a stutter, nothing.
There is this coldness. There was this coldness to him. You know? Uh-huh. He was cold. He was calculating. And mm-hmm. that was a whole new character. It's like, mm-hmm. it's not Irving anymore. Like something or someone else just wearing his skin. Which I don't mm-hmm. mind. Those storylines are nice as well. But I cannot wait. I cannot wait for another episode to see what next. And when I think about the difference between Irving at the beginning of the episode and in the previous episodes, when he was so cheerful and happy. Now that we saw this calculating and cold side to him, I can't help but think that he was overcompensating.
Mm-hmm.
He was trying to give them reactions he thought would be right, and mm-hmm. he was going a little too far. Like, making it a little too happy, a little too energetic. And I gotta say, Orlando Jones, you rock.
It made me think about how you were saying you really didn't want to know what happened in those 6 weeks since Malik was killed.
Yeah.
You don't want to see the flashbacks. You don't want to know. What we thought with him saying, I remember fighting the Horsemen of War. And next thing I know, I'm walking into this convenience store barefoot and dirty, guzzling down milk. Which I have to say, the fact that he picked milk made me kind of think twice. I don't know why, but it really did. Maybe it's because I don't really care for milk. But those 6 weeks, something happened in those 6 weeks.
Yeah.
There's huge Irving story in those 6 weeks that he is conveniently not remembering, air quotes.
Yeah.
And with what we see later makes me wonder what's going on. Because let's go ahead and go over to the flip side. You know, here we've had a missing, for three episodes, a missing title character. In John Noble, our Henry, and we see him in this shabby hotel. I mean, actually, it looks very clean. I don't want to say shabby, but it's a motel.
Yeah.
And we have the owner that, you know, limps in. We have her cute little son that comes and fixes things and makes little quips about who needs a dad, and Henry saying fathers are never what they're cracked up to be. Which I have to admit, I first thought he was talking about Crane, but I realized he was talking about Malik. Like. Later in the episode, I went, oh, you meant Malik. You don't even think of Crane anymore. But seeing those little things, we see Henry, and I'm thinking, okay, is this the kinder, gentler Henry? I like how they built that up, thinking, is he going to do this? What is he, you know, he's being affected by this woman and her son. He's seeing this. And when he sees those thugs out there bullying her and her son, and he turns to go back in, I'm like, is he tentative about helping? What's going on? That moment when at the hotel, he turns was incredible. It was just so incredibly vicious in how he did it.
Yeah.
There was no mercy.
That was another thing, that I felt was writers saying, you think you know where we're going with this. You
right. think that he's being redeemed because he turned on Malik.
Story arc with the lady and her son. You are wrong.
Yeah. You think he's got the good is coming out at him because he turned on Malik and now he's seeing this and, oh, I'll think about my mom and blah, 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 blah. No. No, there are sheep and there are wolves, and I am a wolf.
The wolf, yes. And, oh my goodness. Once again, the fact that they cast John Noble paid off in spades.
Like, I don't know if I want to meet him, because I would just look at him and go, you are probably one of the nicest men in the history of the world.
You but are wrong, creep me out and scare me.
No, I mean John Noble himself.
Oh, yeah. He's probably awesome.
He's probably the sweetest, wouldn't harm a fly, loves puppies. You know, his whole Facebook page is probably puppies and kittens and and all this fun stuff. But if I ever met him, I'm like, you scare me.
No, I would not want to be locked in a room with John Noble. I would freak out and probably have a heart attack.
It made me really think about, wow, he is just, you know, because you were thinking, is Katrina getting to him? Is this really happening? We know that he doesn't have any love lost for Ichabod, which, I mean, come on. Ichabod was taken before you were even born. I think he needs to have more wrath towards Katrina than
Ichabod.
Because, yeah. Come on, you know, it wasn't his fault. Your buddy, Abraham's the one that killed him on the battlefield. It's all his fault. He's mad at Abraham. look at me sticking up for Ichabod. You know me. It's tough. Aww. But, you know, you're thinking, is Katrina getting to him? Is he, you know, Jeremy? Is Jeremy still in there? I don't know if Jeremy is still in there. I don't know if there's anything left that they're going to be. I don't know if this is a Luke Skywalker, Darth Vader moment. I don't know that there's that seed left in there in him. I really don't.
But that's what makes it all so amazing. Come on.
I know. It really does. Come on.
The moment when he just told those thugs, I'm the wolf. And he just killed them. Like that.
Yeah.
And he turned around and this is...
Walked away. Whistling.
This is... Yeah, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to be the wolf. And it's not Moloch's vision. It's not the end of the world. It's Henry's reign. And he's going to rule it, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it really reflects back to that scene with Irving when he kills Kent outside of Abby and Crane's view.
Yeah.
And come back and he's saying, this was a good win. It made me think to our other podcast, Gotham, that Ichabod and Abby are playing a game, but they're playing the wrong game.
Yeah.
They were, when it came to Moloch, everybody was on the same page, and they're not realizing that now that Moloch is gone, it's not just a demon here, a demon there, you know, cleaning up the purgatory thing opened. It's not just regular life. You guys are playing this game, and you think you know the rules? This is the game that's really going on. And it is going to come and bite you in the butt. And you are, I mean, this is such a razor's edge between darkness and light. It's going to be beautiful. And when we had that scene, we've now seen that Henry's back and he's badder than ever. And we've now seen Irving do something that wasn't quite so kosher. And I'm still thinking, I have to admit, because I was doing a you thing. It's like, no, I love Irving. Irving's great. Maybe he has some other ulterior motive. Maybe something in the Grand Grimoire would help him, you know, get back to what he was. But when we have that moment in the woods when Henry and Irving meet, and the moment that got me was when they shook hands. They're both reaching their hands out and they shake hands. That's when the whole world just went, okay, this... The A-B story that we saw before matters not a lick. Yeah. This is it. We're going to the end, and it's going to be fabulous.
And incidentally, this is where I realized that, using your analogy from our other podcast, Gotham, what Henry and Irving are playing are three-dimensional chess. And what Abby and Ichabod are playing is tic-tac-toe.
There you go. There you go. Yeah, definitely.
That's basically it. And I have no idea how, aside from huge amount of luck, Ichabod and Abby can actually get out of this on top.
It's going to be these next three episodes that we have are just going to be so packed full of so much incredibleness. I mean, the fact that, did you notice how when Irving was talking to Henry, we're going long in this episode and I'm sure you guys understand why. Did you notice how when Irving was talking to Henry, he was talking like a fellow general, even though Henry is now saying, I was aiming low, I'm aiming higher. They were talking. He wasn't talking like I am your servant. He was saying, the witnesses trust me again. He's putting out these plans. He's dealing this as, even though he knows that Henry is the big guy, they're still fairly
that
equal.
That was a
meeting
of equals. That was a meeting of equals.
Yeah. Yeah. That was, he still knows in the chain, he's below him, but he's not answering to him because he has to, because he's bound by this contract. He's answering
fight.
Him because
yeah, it's his fight now.
We're on the same side. Yeah, exactly. And that, I think, that compiled with Henry doing the, you know, like when Irving was talking about this is where the battle was, this is where it all ended, and Henry saying, no, this is where it all begins. I was like, oh my gosh, you two are just... And you know that Henry, being this, what he is, we've got Irving, who is this supposed good guy. Our friend is back. Henry is supposedly dead. Katrina has now lived almost 2 months. I'm sure we're several weeks past the 6 weeks after the end of Moloch. Mm-hmm. So we're talking several months now that Katrina's been mourning her son, that she sees these flashes. And she saw flashes. Remember when she was doing the whole thing with Irving?
Yeah.
She was seeing all the Henry stuff, and we're thinking, oh, she's just so preoccupied by Henry. She's seeing the Henry in that. So she's going to see this connection through Irving to Henry. She's going to have her son coming back and that tie. And now she's got this darkness awoken in her. Oh my God. That is just, you're going to have Henry, you're going to have Irving, you're going to have Katrina, you're going to have Abraham. You know, Headless is coming back.
Oh yeah, definitely.
That talk about the Fearsome Four. We're going to have the Fantastic Four on one side, the Fab Four on one side, and the Fearsome Four on the other.
And the showdown, when it all comes to an end, darling, you're going to get fireworks on your birthday.
Oh, happy, happy, joy, joy. It's going to be so much fun. I'm scared about us talking about that one, because that one's just... That's going to be a great big squee fest of what we have in store here. Anything else besides joy?
I feel the need to go rewatch the episode, so we should probably end recording this podcast so I can go enjoy the evilness of this episode.
Well, we do have the next episode coming up that we'll see when we record. That one might be, again, that one might be a delayed one, but hey, we're giving you four. A marathon ending with this. We're giving you a great big Sleepy Hollow marathon to listen to, so you've got to catch up on us as well. The next episode, episode 16, is called What Lies Beneath. I'm not going to tell you what happens, but I am going to say that we see another founding father, a founding father that we haven't seen yet, that I've been wondering where he is. We are going to be having the witnesses. So we're going to be talking a little bit more about the witnesses, and we are going to be seeing the return of Jenny, and yes, we are going to be seeing some more of Frank Irving. This description of this episode looks really good. Like, we're going to have a good solid episode that, again, I don't think the witnesses are going to realize the game that's really being played. They're still going to be going very simple and deeper underground. What lies beneath the game they're playing is something entirely different. And it's just going to make these last three episodes fabulous.
Content.
Fabulously wonderful and wonderful and wonderful. Thank you so much, Alex, for joining me.
You're welcome. I'll see you next time.
It was glorious. Don't forget to follow us and like us and subscribe to us and all that stuff that I said earlier. We will catch you next time for Sleepy Hollow, What Lies Beneath. Good luck. You're going to need it.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media.